On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Valkyrie Holmes, who's the CEO and co-founder of Fora. And for those who can surf safely or safely surf, it's faura.us. And we're going to dive into the company. We're going to learn a little bit from Valkyrie. Welcome, Valkyrie, to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Peter. Great to be here.
Yeah. God, I have so many questions for you. I was talking with Will Jones, my friend at Independent Agent Magazine, and he mentioned you and said, you got to have her on your podcast. She's a super smart whiz kid who started in InsurTech at age 20. I don't know if that's true, but you can tell us. And I'm like, okay. And then I started looking at some of your posts and your company online, and you do sound like a super smart whiz kid. And that is a very old phrase or description, so apologize for that in advance if it doesn't quite suit you as you would describe yourself. In general terms, was he right? First of all, yes, I should be talking to you, but are you a super smart whiz kid?
No, I love that. I don't think I've ever actually described myself as a whiz kid, but I think I do have a passion for just like doing things that I think are pretty out of the ordinary for someone that's pretty young. Like right now, I'm 21 years old. Started a few different companies at different stages, and now Fora is kind of the big one that I'm really excited about. But ultimately, yeah, you just kind of fall into certain things, I think. But it's very flattering. Okay. I'll have to thank Will.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so where are you from originally? How did this all get started? At age 21 now, it seems, like most people when I meet them and they've done all the things you've done, they're like 41 or at least 31 and you're 21. So where are you from originally? How did this all get to where you're at today?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm from Las Vegas, born and raised in Las Vegas, and I'm actually in Vegas right now, but now I live out in New York City. And I think a lot of the initial kind of startup mentality and just like wanting to get into insurance tech, climate tech, things of that nature came from just having a lot of time because of things like COVID. So I'm pretty transparent about the fact that, I got into this industry because I felt like there were a lot of challenges in like the general education sphere around how we look at property risk. And that comes from a lot of different competitions originally, and then trying to start a few different companies and not really going anywhere with original ideas and kind of spinning that out. But in terms of Las Vegas, we're ranked 49th out of the 50 states for education, I'm pretty sure. So I think I just had to get out of my head a little bit, and start experimenting. Very classic, like, building things in your garage, type thing. And eventually from there got more and more into software, found my co-founder, and now we've been building Fora for almost 3 years. So it's been pretty wild. I consistently have to reflect and think about where I am today compared to 3 years ago. But yeah, it's definitely a lot.
Yeah. And you were also a part-time piano teacher and a math tutor way back in the day, whenever that was, since you're only 21 now. I was struck when I read that, because I thought, that is like two distinct skill sets that exercise various parts of your brain. And so you're good at both of those things. Maybe more people are than I'm aware of, but I've not heard of that before. That's so cool.
Oh, thank you. No, I mean, my mom was very much, the kind of person that wanted to put her children into everything. So I was playing piano from the age of 3. She would bring our math books on vacation with us, and we would do math problems before we could go and play outside. Like I think I've just always been like pretty focused in a bunch of different areas, because of that. But yeah, I love piano. I love the arts. I love math and science, and I don't think that'd be a secret to anyone, I guess is my point there.
Okay, right. All right. You mentioned you wanted to you get in the garage and build things and the software and so forth around InsurTech and climate tech, but how did you even pick those things? I mean, it's so interesting to me how that was that just a chance encounter? Did you wake up one day in high school or something and said, "Hey, school's boring. I want to do something new. I want to start a company. I want to be an entrepreneur." And InsurTech and climate tech look like cool places that need a lot of help.
Yeah. No, it's really funny. Whenever I tell people this, they don't really believe me, but I feel like when I was around 14, I started having a lot more a lot more just like awareness of the fact that, oh, okay, things are changing in the world and I don't feel like I can do very much about it. And then I joined this program back in high school that's now more of a global program called TKS or the Knowledge Society that the program is really meant to expose young people to different areas of tech, get them into startups, get them into more rigorous academia, just like trying to find people that want to make a difference and then accelerating them along that path. And so I got into this program and really started to take advantage of it. Realized very quickly, around, I think I was probably 15 at this time, that what we know about in the general public, what we know about our properties, what we know about wildfire, about hurricane, flood, until you really go through something like that, there isn't a lot of preventative, like programs that have really been super successful. And that's a really big problem because as I started to dig into the wildfire space, I really started to understand, oh, there's kind of three things that are happening here that most people don't understand. It's the idea that we have crazy population increases in higher risk areas. So tons of people have been moving and still are moving to areas that are very disaster prone because at the end of the day, they are very beautiful. And then the second thing is we haven't really had a lot of sustainable mitigation programs where we're clearing debris off of areas or we're mitigating our risk of our properties in the way that we build them. And because population increases have happened so rapidly, we have had to build very fast, which typically means we also have to build relatively cheap. So now you have all these people living in very disaster-prone areas in houses that are not built to withstand the disasters that are now happening and accelerating because of the warming climate. And all of a sudden, that becomes a very big issue that you need to find a way to describe to people to factor into that decision-making process. And there's a bunch of different barriers to entry for that, cost and education, namely being the biggest two. But if you can find something that marries those two and provides more resources to multiple stakeholders that benefit from people reducing their risk, so that's insurance companies, real estate professionals, banks, homeowners, etc., then that starts to create more of this cohesive system that almost creates a positive feedback loop. So all that put together, in exploring things like wildfire risk and exploring what our current, infrastructure looks like when it comes to these disaster recovery programs, I think it just really, struck a chord with what I wanted to be a part of and aligned with the fact that I was already exploring a little bit of like, what do I stand for? How do I want to live the rest of my life? Just like, yeah, just what do I want to dedicate my early career to? And I think this is one of those things.
It's very consistent with what I read about Generation Z, aka Zoomers, which is the group you belong to, who as a group, they tend to not be thinking so much about climbing a career ladder and making money, although it's still important to them. It's more about like how can I make a difference? How can I have a good experience? How can I give back and all those things that are also important to older generations, but I think it's more front and center, and maybe it's something to do with people just being disillusioned with the way the world has changed, the political world, the economic world, the big corporations with layoffs and all the stresses that you guys have been going through as young emerging professionals. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. It resonates with me what you're saying. What do you want to stand for? That's very consistent with folks your age. I think it's very cool, and I think you can make a difference there. But tell us more. So there was certainly there's an issue here. Sephora, the company, is about providing solutions. You mentioned the feedback loop. Can you talk more about does Sephora link those groups, carriers, real estate companies, banks, et cetera, or is that a side thing that will happen if you're successful with the mission of Sephora?
Yeah, great question. So most of the things that we do at Fora are very insurance specific for now. I think this lays the foundation of us going into other industries and making an impact there for real estate and for government and for other things. But at least initially, the mission behind what we do at Fora is all about bridging this gap between the policyholder and the insurer. And creating more transparency around the property data that we have on the ground. So what I mean by that is when we work with companies, we're helping carriers collect more verified data about a property's risk, namely in pretty disaster-prone areas, in partnership with their policyholder. And what we found is that when you collect data from aerial imaging providers or maybe inspections, maybe there's like permitting databases and public resources, there's a couple different things that happen there that are part of the reason why we don't have as much visibility as we used to have into our properties today. One of which is the reliance on public data sources. This woman, Astrid, she just posted about, she posted this fantastic article, kind of breaking this down in more detail. But it's the fact that a lot of providers rely on repackaging a lot of public data sources and adding their own analytics on top of it. But with public defunding of some of these more, potent organizations, things like NOAA, FEMA, we are starting to already see the feedback from that, which is that all of our data sources, all of our property information is going to become more and more outdated as we go along, which ultimately means insurance companies are pricing and underwriting on very limited, very limited information year over year. So that's the first kind of part of that. The second part is that for the majority of these data sources, we don't really have a good view of the property on the ground unless you're paying an arm and a leg for inspections on every property. And if we marry that concept of getting things on the ground with the idea of engaging your policyholder, so walking someone around their property, they take pictures and videos, we couple that with third-party information, then all of a sudden that becomes a more cohesive picture for an underwriter to be able to say, yes, on a quick basis, these are the risks that we have. This is what we're comfortable with. I'm confident in this decision, and then we can move it forward and create a better world for those customers. So that's kind of like the overall mission of Fora. We work with carriers and now brokers. We just started releasing our broker platform for agents to be able to generate reports and submit those with their carriers to understand more of their risks that they're submitting. But yeah, so lots to say, everywhere on that topic,
Yeah,
but that's the
right.
big gist.
There are some there are some insurtechs that well, there's a whole bunch of them as it relates with property from before the before pricing the policy, but also claims and so forth, inspections around claims, and a lot of them are AI driven or driven by technology that kind of knows what, say, what's inside a building or something. And what you're describing is you're not necessarily flying a drone or having some other service fly a drone, right? You're linking the homeowner, and maybe they're in a disaster prone area, and they've taken some steps to mitigate, perhaps like they cleared the brush or whatever they're doing. They have a special roof or special materials on the side of the house that are fire resistant, for example. But they're involved in the collection of you said pictures and video, right? So that's different than just flying a drone. They're aware of what they're doing, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for us is, again, we're trying to combine getting information that's verified on the ground with the policyholder. So we're not using any drone technology, or like we're confirming it with things like aerial imaging, satellite, and like permitting databases and whatnot. So we are taking a few of these like third-party attributes, but for the most part, it's policyholder driven. So yeah, you would get a text that has a link, so there's no downloads necessary. And you use this link, you open it up on your device, you walk around, you confirm some information, and then you also collect photos and videos from your camera of your most potent risk factors that we can then use to generate reports for both parties. So it, I, and I think the most interesting part about that that we've seen is, if you give your policyholder things in exchange for this acquisition of data, then the likelihood of completion, but then also the satisfaction rate of a service like that bumps up, 30 to 60% in some cases. So what we've seen is we give a policyholder their own version of this report that says, this is your survivability score. So we take all these elements and then we score them based off of how likely this property is going to survive the next disaster. And then we recommend action items to that policyholder that are personalized to their property. So for that, it would be something along the lines of, oh, okay, we saw that you like to lean lumber against your property and you haven't cleared off your roof in a while, and maybe you don't have a wind-rated garage door in something like a hurricane-prone area. So it maps out, here are all the things that your policyholders should do, or that you as a policyholder should do, to not only protect your property but also make yourself more profitable as a consumer, to be able to keep your insurance policy or even qualify for discounts. So that's kind of the feedback loop that I was talking about in the beginning, which is, if we give people the tools to help them reduce their risk and maintain it year over year, they start to associate that with a more affordable insurance policy, which ultimately helps more people not only qualify for that, but just save more properties and make that education process more embedded.
Okay, that's cool. So, the customer for this, you mentioned it's carriers and brokers. They're the ones who pay the freight, and the app is provided to the policyholders, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So ultimately, would the idea be that people would start seeing, start playing more active role in risk management and seeing the linkage between, you said keeping your policy. If you're in a wind prone area or fire prone area, that's a thing now, like to even have a policy. But then the discount part, I could see a scenario where people would start to change their behavior, right? If you say on a street, people kind of mimic what their neighbors are doing. You would get a pool, I'm getting a pool. You're getting a screening porch, I'm getting a screening porch. Everybody talks. So you could change behavior of people and make it less of a blame game against the insurance industry, but then play more of a role in changing neighborhoods, not just one house. I could see that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think this is all about kind of gauging and quantifying consumer engagement and behavior, essentially. So when we talk to a carrier, typically we're trying to understand, okay, how are you interacting with your policyholders today? What does your non-renewal process look like? And I use this example a couple different times, which is this idea that, we recently had a policyholder who was non-renewed by their insurance company because of pooling on her roof. And she had just replaced her roof 3 years earlier, pretty, renovated house. They had seismic retrofits. They're in California. It's like a pretty extensive process that they went through. But the first thing about that is they didn't think to tell their insurance company any of that information. So their insurance company, because they're not getting any of that more granular data, are automatically thinking that, okay, this property is much less safe than it actually is. And then when they got this non-renewal notice, they could have switched to another carrier, which would have been, $2,000, $3,000 more every year on top of what they were already paying, which would have, decreased the premium and typically lost a customer for life from that other carrier. Or what they actually ended up doing was they took a FOREA assessment. We told them, hey, here are some things that you can do for your roof that help mitigate the risk of pooling. this is what your insurance company typically wants to see. And then not only do they get reinstated, but they basically spend a couple hundred bucks instead of spending the thousands every year that they would now have to have with a new carrier. So the behavior of that is now almost like an ROI, like cost benefit analysis exercise, where as a homeowner, I'm trying to think, okay, do I really want to spend the money to do this, or do I want to switch? Well, if you make it easy for them to, do that work, then you ultimately end up saving a lot more premium and generating more profitable consumers.
It's really cool. That's so what does Fora mean? What was the meaning behind that?
Yeah, fora is kind of like old Germanic language for before or pre. So everything we do is kind of pre-disaster or before a disaster happens. So pretty, it's just kind of like all encompassing for all the natural disasters that we cover.
Yeah, I like those. Those are cool stories. So you're building this brand. How the website's cool. I like the website, although I don't know what the future of websites is with the way AI is going. It kind of makes me nervous.
That's fair.
But you're out there, you're going to conferences. We'll talk about InsurTech Connect in a moment. How do you build up this brand so that people kind of feel it? It's not just a website. It's I know you and your co-founder are the faces of the brand, which provides a very unique vision, I think, for it, especially as you talk about your career, as you mentioned earlier, and what you're passionate about. But how do you what have you learned about branding so far in your young life, and how do you transfer it so that people, your policyholders, people using the app, but also the people who pay the bills, the carriers, the brokers, feel this as much as you do?
Yeah, no, I think it's such an important question. And honestly, like carriers ask themselves, especially in, like marketing and branding, they ask themselves this all the time. It's how do we associate like a good neighbor or, like the Geico Gecko with our brand so that people feel like, okay, they trust us, they've seen this before. And I think we took almost a similar approach to that, where we need people to not only understand that this is an option, that this solution could actually help a lot of people, but also that it is the way that insurance is moving forward anyways. So like really it's we talk a lot about the fact that, now there's surveys that say 60% of consumers want more personalized communication, digitized communication from their carriers. So people are paying more for insurance and they want more value from their insurance companies. Insurance companies want to, they're in the business of selling protection, and at the end of the day, we want to feel like our policyholders, like if I'm a policyholder, I want to feel like I'm being protected, like I feel like I'm being cared about, and it unites all of these different concepts. So I think in terms of the brand itself, we took a very simple approach, which was lead with value. And I know that, as a young founder, as a young person in insurance, that is kind of the first thing that people see, and they make judgments off of that initially, right? And that's everyone. That's me, that's you, that's everyone. But I think in us leading with the value that we provide, with the fact that, hey, we can get you up to six times the amount of information that you typically get, that's more qualified, that's verified by a policyholder, that they feel good because you're protecting them, you're giving them these resources, and you don't have to build out these custom solutions for your consumers because we already do that, right? It's about like uniting all of these pieces, and if we lead with that, I think people start to take notice. And that's why also like on our LinkedIn and all of our socials, we make a lot of jokes on there, and we try to make people laugh and like make it engaging, but at the end of the day, there's always something educational in it, and we feel like it's really important to keep people on the same page in terms of where the industry is headed. So yeah, I think, the natural disaster space is already one that pulls on the heartstrings a little bit. So I won't say that it's all just everything that we've done, but it is a really big problem, and it continues to illustrate how much of a problem it is for the industry. So we just want to make people feel like they are important, that they matter in the context of like being a policyholder, and that there are things that you can do to understand that.
So what, yeah, you're right about the pulling at the heartstrings. I mean, and there's so many different kinds of natural disasters today. So what, in a general sense, as you go out and talk to other founders and investors, et cetera, what is your impression, on the state of insurtechs today in a general sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting space that honestly, if I was building a startup like this, like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it would not be as friendly. I know the insurance industry has really warmed up to the idea of people coming in and building things for the industry that solve a lot of these challenges. And I think a lot of companies are utilizing things like AI to understand the state of a company. And on top of that, there are companies that are popping up to validate the current AI companies that are aiming to help solve these challenges. So I think it's starting to become this really unique ecosystem that all kind of funnels into each other, which I think is necessary at the end of the day.
Do you attend InsurTech Connect in Las Vegas coming up in October? Is that something you go to, and what will you try to get done there?
We've been to ITC. We went last year, and we actually won two pitch competitions there. We won the Guidewire Insure Pitch and the State Farm pitch competition, which was really, really exciting. And
Nice.
because of that, we're coming back this year. And we have a booth, and ultimately, our goal is just to meet carriers, MGAs, and insurtechs that are writing business in these higher risk areas, or that are providing services that allow people to write more business in these disaster prone areas, and helping them just get more qualified data, helping them on that side, helping them with policyholder engagement and just understanding those insights. And I think that'll be a big thing. I know we're hosting a couple events. I know I'm hosting a panel as well. So happy
Cool.
to chat with anyone that's going to be there. I think it'll be great.
I look forward to seeing you there. I wonder, at those meetings, and there's other obviously InsurTech meetings as well around the world. But I'm struck by this kind of mashup between the customer being the carrier, but then also investors and then founders. Is there something about being a founder that people often misunderstand what your life is like? Not just walking into these meetings, but just in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot more literature out there now about what it's like to be a founder. So maybe this is misplaced, but at least in my circles, with my family and just friends that maybe aren't in startups or aren't in tech, I think you really do make this company like a part of your personality, a part of you, a part of just like everything I think about is insurance and climate related. And I'm constantly working. I don't know if it's something that people misunderstand necessarily. I think it's like people know that founders have to work more than, the average person in like a just like standard tech role. But I think the obsession about a problem and like the determination is what sets a lot of founders apart. So for me, I am here technically on vacation with my family, and I've still worked 10 hours every day. I find some way to. I had my laptop open when I was getting my hair done yesterday. It really does, but like at the same time, I love it. Like people will hear that and they'll say like, "Don't you want to take a break?" And I feel like I have a lot of good people around me to tell me when I do need to take a break, but I just love this company. I love this job. I love creating a product that people love that actually like solves a pain point for them. So yeah, I think it's a very unique position to be in, but I couldn't be happier, as much of a cliche as it is.
Yeah, it is a cliche, but I feel, quite fortunate myself that I really love what I do as well. It doesn't feel like work. I mean, I know it's work,
Yeah.
and I know your generation's a lot more cognizant of how stress can impact your health and so forth over time. But if you love what you do, it's not quite as stressful. It really is fun. I'm with you on that one, Valkyrie. I do feel that way about my career, which is many more years than yours, but I can tell as you're describing this that you do like what you do.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's important. I really do. And I know there's a lot of people that maybe are in positions where they don't really love what they do, and maybe that's just a function to allow them to live the life that they love, right? I think there's a lot to be said about the balance there, but as of right now, I'm just trying to do what I can with what I have and make some kind of difference. Which I think, will be really cool.
Well, since you know math and you know the piano, you probably are, even though you are obsessed with flora right now, there are other things probably in your mind bouncing around. So what is Girls Ignited? For example, because you are very transparent in your social posts and your causes and so forth, from what I've observed. And it sounds like you're the type of person that wants to help others. So I don't know if that's an example of that, but Girls United kind of, I wanted to ask you what that was.
Yeah, no. I mean, Girls United, I was a part of a volunteer program, and I guess still technically am, although I haven't done as much recently, just because of everything going on conference season, but yeah, it's really a program that's meant to kind of connect young girls to more STEM and tech roles. So I still do think we have I think it's more of like a confidence thing with a lot of girls, and I experienced it myself. I'm speaking from personal experience that as if I were to think about engineering, I wouldn't even know where to start when I was younger, and you just kind of have to like have the confidence to hop in and take that leap. And that takes a long time to cultivate. Like I still have my days where I am definitely not as confident as I need to be to make a lot of those things. And you just start to have to develop, you have to develop that determination. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a program that puts on these events, that connects people with other mentors, that can help them along their career path. And I love it. I love programs like that. There's a couple other programs that exist that have actually been getting more and more into insurance and the insurtech space, which I think is really fantastic. And a lot of people forget that there's a lot of the insurance industry, like more than half of the insurance industry is women. So there's a lot of opportunity here, to accelerate a lot of people.
That's a really good point. I don't know in the car on the carrier side, if it's 50-50 or more women, or I could very well be, but I can tell you on the distribution side, agents and brokers, there's a lot of females. And they are a lot of women are coming, have been there already. Many of them in the old days were in service, customer service, et cetera. But more and more, I'm running into women who are owners and starting agencies, and it's really great. But because a lot of the insurance decisions, and I would imagine decisions around, like, yeah, I want to take more ownership for protection of my home. Your end consumer are women as well. And so if you want to reach, a growing share of where the money's coming from, it's going to be women. So this is what my kids tell me anyway. I have two girls and they're always telling me the future is female. I'm sure
No,
they
I
stole
love
that
it.
from
I
a
love it.
t-shirt somewhere, but it's
No,
very
that's
true. And
great.
I think it's great. I think it's provided a needed balance in the workplace. I need to check into that statistic because that's very exciting to me because I grew up in a world where it was rather male pale and stale in the insurance industry, and change is a good thing. But back to you. I want to find out at your ripe age of 21, what have you screwed up so far? What have you looked back and said, "Eh, I shouldn't have done that"? Although you have plenty more, you have a lot more time to make a lot more mistakes. Hopefully, there'll be small ones. All right, because that's a part of life. Because it's not a straight line. But is there anything that you learned? Anything that you could share?
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. And I honestly, I hope I make more mistakes so that I can just learn from them. And I think if I'm not making mistakes, then there's something that's
Right.
much more wrong. But yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing that I initially struggled with was just kind of getting to the point where I could take the leap, but really understand the problem. So I think I have a really good understanding of the industry as it stands, where it's going, what the pain point is, but it took a long time to get to that. And I think I initially approached the market with a lot of different ideas that kind of, like muddied the water initially. So when we were first growing, it was really hard to get to any kind of real understanding of like where Fora could provide value because we had all of these things that we could do, but we didn't really, I didn't do the work firsthand to understand what people were actually telling me they needed. And I think like we've been a part of a couple different programs that have helped peel that back, and get to the point where we're in a good place. But yeah, like that was a lot of I made a lot of mistakes in our positioning, in our marketing, and how we talk about the business. Just because I didn't really understand what the true solution needed to be. And then you start to ask more pointed questions and get to the bottom of it, and it slowly starts to become clearer. But there's also, like I said before, like a part of your ego is tied up in your company, a part of your like,
Yeah.
you wake up every day and if something bad happens in the company, then you're not having a good time, right? Like I think a lot of founders and honestly, almost every good founder I know does wrap a little bit of themselves up in their company. And so it's also a little bit hard to like peel yourself back from, oh, if I made a mistake, then it's my fault, then it's on me, then like everything sucks because of me. And
Right.
thankfully I have a really good co-founder that, we can pull each other out of those out of those cycles a good amount of the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think it's bound to happen, right? But I think definitely just the biggest mistake is probably just not like approaching the market with a solution when I didn't really fully understand the problem first.
Well, yeah, you're not alone there. A lot of insurtech owners made that mistake. One of the guy, not mistake, but kind of teachable moment, I should say. I mean, one of my
It's like a Russian nesting doll. It really is. Like you just keep pulling them up. And then so there's more underneath it, and like it
Yeah.
really takes a long time to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I know. One of my good friends and clients said once to an insurtech, I was there, he said, "Talk to me after you pivot." Because there was something wrong with the initial pitch. But they did, and they're working together. So, it's there's teachable moments everywhere. So speaking of teaching, is there somebody in your life, Dockery, who was a mentor to you? And I also would suggest, maybe you're doing this already, folks who are twice, three times your age need mentoring as well, to be honest with you. Because if there's any generation who's going to figure out AI, it's going to be the Zoomers. I can tell you most of the world doesn't know what it's going, except they're where it's going, but they're scared of it, but your generation, which is a very large generation, by the way, just passed the boomers in the workforce. So more of you than more of me than of me. But I think, if somebody was your mentor, and then would you consider being a mentor to others who are older? I think that would be extremely valuable.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have so many mentors. It's actually crazy. Like I do not stray away from having people that I can just like call on because like startups are hard and life is hard. And that's also a cliche, but it is true, and it's a cliche for a reason, right? Like there I think we all need to have those kinds of people. There's a few that come to mind. We have a lot of people, like Bob Frady, he used to run Hazard Hub, very successful and just like super knowledgeable about the intratech space. and just like has a lot going on in his mind that he just like is willing to share with other people that, you know, I've just found so valuable. Max Drucker, founder of Carpe Data, he has also been just like, you know, just so willing to understand our process, to understand our value proposition and give us feedback and really just get into the weeds of how we need to be approaching this market. And as someone who's been in the space for you know, a decade, like that is just so invaluable, as someone coming from outside of the insurance industry, right? And there's definitely other people, Marissa Buckley, Audrey Torrance, I'm probably forgetting like a million other people at this point. But just like also a lot of just like really powerful, strong, super impressive women, that have like made their career and now want to share it with other people. I really just gravitate towards them. And I think a lot of people just resonate with the fact that like at the end of the day, we're in insurance to help people. Like this is not about like, you know, obviously, I want our company to be successful, and I think we will be successful. But at the end of the day, we came into insurance because it's this very unique financial incentive mechanism that gets people to change. And if we can marry that with what we need to have on like a property risk level, then that solves a problem. And I think people gravitate towards that. And there's been a lot of people along those lines that have refined that with us. So that's just to name a few. But there's so many that I could probably spend the whole hour just naming them off.
Yeah, I don't know all those people, but I know some of them well, and I agree with you. They're outstanding individuals. So last question, Valkyrie. Thanks so much for your time. And but I wanted to ask if you have a mantra in your brain as you go about your day, a piece of advice you've gotten from someone, maybe one of those mentors that's guided you in this mission you're on now.
And this will come off, you know, different to different people, but my mantra has always been like for the last, you know, like 6 years, that you're not special. And a lot of people will take that and be, you know, you can be very pessimistic with that statement, but I kind of view it as like nobody's special, so everyone has something in common with one another. And if you can find that in an industry, in people, in mentors, and you know, in like basically everything, it kind of goes back to just like how do we best solve a problem? How do we best unite people to really create a very comprehensive solution? And I think a lot of the problems that have risen in this world is they're because a lot of people don't understand that they're not the only people that they need to help, or it's not just like one group that they need to help. It's everyone. And like finding something that fits everyone as much as possible, while that is a very optimistic goal, I think the more we think in that way, the more people we have the opportunity to help. So yeah, I always like to leave with that, and what people take with it, you know, they will take with it what they will, but I definitely view it as a very, very optimistic way of looking at how we can solve problems today.
It's great. Well, thank you very much for your time again, Valkyrie. I wish you really good luck with everything you're doing. I look forward to meeting you at InsureTech Connect and keep on keeping on. You're not special. I'm not special. Nobody's special. How do we unite people behind some really good solutions? I am hopeful that that communities and neighborhoods will figure out a way to solve this whole issue of insurability for homes, because right now no one is happy, right?
No, I mean, definitely. And I love conversations like this. Thank you so much for having me on. And I'm excited to connect with people. If anyone's at ITC, you know, let me know, and happy to save some swag for people. But I think it'll be a great time.
Cool. All right, my friend. We'll see you there. Thanks for your time again.
Thank you.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Artrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.